You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello, and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's Thursday, April the 16th, 2026, and this is episode number 135. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Mercedes EQS getting Cybertruck-style steering and high voltage, charging a car in under 10 minutes, and driving it. Mystery car. Ayana taking over the Circle K charging network. And of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Dominic Ioni. Joining us today is the beatific Mr. Tom Malogny, host of the YouTube channel State of Charge and the premier EV charging news site, evchargingstations.com. Our special guest with us this week is William from Out of Spec Roaming.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
Good to have you here with us, William.
I have been wanting to go on this podcast for so long. I watch every podcast and I'm so excited to be here.
And we tried to have you on a couple of weeks ago because you drove the, was it the iX3 you drove?
The iX3 was a while ago. I think I drove the Ioniq, like the old Ioniq, and then I drove the ID7. Anyways, it didn't really work out for the recording of the show the last time, so I'm glad to be here right now.
Right, and you're here with us this week because, so just to let people know, you're based in Norway, so and you cover a lot of, you cover Europe for Out of Spec, as well as other things. So we asked you on this week because last week you went to Paris, where you witnessed an EV being charged from 0 to 97% in 9 minutes and 22 seconds. So of course we're talking about the BYD flash charger with built-in Blade 2.0 batteries, and it was charging the first car that BYD plans to sell in Europe with the ability to handle that level of charging power, and that's the Denza Z9 GT. So tell us what it was like to see that an EV charge this fast, and did you get the sense of the ambitions of BYD? Like they have a lot of flash chargers planned for Europe and China this year, but did you get the sense that they want to like dominate charging, like maybe globally with this system, which would create demand for the vehicles they sell, because their vehicles can take advantage of it? And yeah,
totally. They have big ambitions. They are saying 3,000 stations in Europe within 12 months, which in my opinion is kind of like it's crazy to say. I think they mean 3,000 plugs, because I don't see how they can even do that in any sense, especially since we had Diego there, which is in charge of this kind of rollout of flash charging in Europe. And he told me that they won't sell the hardware to CPOs. They only want to install these themselves. They are going to do it at BYD dealerships and in highway corridors, which sounds very ambitious to me, the plans that they have. They also have plans of rolling this out outside Europe, for example, in South America. BYD is selling very well, and they kind of want to keep building that customer base and also trickle down the flash charging technology from the more expensive Denza brand, because it is a very expensive brand in Europe, and I can maybe talk a little bit about that later. But yeah, they have big, big plans for this flash charging network and these flash charging cars. It's a huge thing for BYD.
So these systems are super expensive, since they have the high voltage components and almost 60 kilowatt hours of battery, but cheap to install relatively, because they don't have the need for the super high power grid connections. So has BYD talked about, say, pricing for these chargers? But you say they're not going to sell these prices. They're just doing everything themselves.
I thought they would sell them to CPOs after they said that they would have this many stations rolled out in such a short amount of time. And there were talks about it. There were some rumors going around, but Diego was like hard no on that they won't sell the hardware to anyone. They want to install them themselves. And it can be installed in different configurations depending on the available grid connection. What we saw was 290 kilowatt hour batteries, completely off grid. These are capable of delivering such high C rates that you can just flash charge from batteries alone. But the plan is, of course, to have a good grid connection and replenish these batteries before the next car comes up and flash charges. That's the plan for the entire system, and that's how it works in China. It's already rolled out pretty well in China, and it's used by customers. So there is not really a theory. It kind of works, but of course, we have to see how the rollout is in Europe before anything else.
They mentioned other markets, like you mentioned South America, but they did mention, like, I think they're doing it in South Africa as well.
Yes, yeah, South Africa and other countries in Africa, I believe. The BYD is very, very global. It's really every place except the United States.
Right. What about Canada? Did it mention Canada?
No, but there is stuff happening in Canada that might make them install flash chargers there. Yeah,
Dom, if you remember, when I was in South Africa, it was either October or November of last year, they made the announcement while I was there that they were going to be installing these flash chargers. So I made a video short and just talking about it, that, like, you know, I think they're saying they're going to have 100 of them, 100 locations installed in the next year and a half or something like that. It was pretty exciting for the people there, because I talked to a few people that had electric cars, and they said, you know, the biggest problem is infrastructure here. We don't have a great, robust infrastructure. It'll be fantastic if they come in here and help us out.
Right, because that's the thing. They can just plop this thing down pretty much anywhere. Did they say how big a grid connection they actually need?
They didn't say, I think it differs from place to place, actually. Yeah. And it seems like a very dynamic system where they can drop in as much battery storage as they need for the site to just get these installed in many places.
Yeah,
that's true.
It still has to be a pretty...
It's a good grid connection still.
It has to be pretty significant if you're going to have any kind of throughput. You know, the batteries are one thing, but... You know, you have car after car after car charging. Those batteries are going to deplete pretty quickly.
From my understanding, it's a normal EV charging grid connection, and then they have the batteries to be able to get this kind of up to the flash charger stuff. So you don't really save that much on the grid connection, from my understanding.
Interesting. So did they talk about pricing then? Because maybe this is going to be, with all this infrastructure, with like 600 kilowatt hours of batteries, maybe they need to charge more for it. I don't know.
No, they were very secretive with pricing and their hardware and stuff. It was it's clear that they are very ambitious, and they also want to keep many of the things involved in the system as secret as possible.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. So they start with a Denza Z9 GT. Do you know how many models BYD plans to sell in Europe with the Blade 2.0 batteries, which would be able to take advantage, full advantage of this kind of flash charging?
No, they didn't tell us about that yet, because they were so on pushing this kind of Denza brand, and this was a Denza event, because they want to push this luxury brand into Europe. I'm actually not sure if this strategy will work for them, because BYD, the brand BYD, which is, of course, the main brand, kind of just got recognition in many European countries as being a larger supplier of electric vehicles around, like on the mainstream. And now they are like pushing a new brand. I'm not sure if that's the best idea, but we know that BYD has other flash charging models that's not under the Denza brand, which is under the usually more affordable BYD brand, and the BYD Dynasty, or what they call the more luxurious SUVs and stuff. We know that there are plans to get more models into Europe, but wasn't mentioned at the Denza event because they really focused on the Denza brand, kind of setting up this luxury brand and for Europe.
I pulled up the video that you made for Eurospec Roaming on the screen now. So if you're watching this, the people watching this on YouTube can see, actually, like right now we're looking at the big battery boxes and the power conversion cabinet on the site with the, so where was it? Oh, this is in Paris, I guess. And this
outside
is
Paris on the UTIC racetrack or whatever it's called. Yeah.
Okay. And this is a shot of the Blade 2.0 battery. So the Denza brand, they didn't really talk about other brands at all. So the Denza Z9 GT, I guess we could talk about this as well. So you have a video up on Eurospec Roaming as well, a review of that car. What'd you think of it?
Okay, so first of all, it's the most crazy, insane car ever, like objectively from the specifications. You have 122 kilowatt hour battery, you have three electric motors, you have the ability to go crab walk, you have independent rear steering on the two wheels so they can tow in and tow out, which basically enables pivoting around one of the front wheels you choose, and you can pivot the entire car around, and again the crab walk, and then you have the normal Chinese luxury features, like all the seats are massaging, all the seats are heated and ventilated, you have a fridge inside the car, of course, and you have a insane amount of speakers inside the car, and Nappa leather, everything is very luxurious and nice. And then you have like the driving dynamics, which I personally am not a huge fan of. I think it drives okay, but there are some, it's very different, because I drove for example, the Porsche Cayenne Turbo, which I can compare to this car, other than that this car is half the price with the same amount of horsepower, which is interesting. And like the driving dynamics are like way different between these two cars. But from like a luxury standpoint and features, for even the expensive price, which I think is too expensive for a new brand in Europe, but the features for the price in Europe is kind of unmatched. It really is.
Right, but they just don't match up necessarily with the experience. I put this more, it looks like more like a Taycan cross-country kind of format, or shape, basically. It's more like that than an SUV, right?
Yes, totally. It's a large station wagon. It's 5.2 meters long, but with a turning radius of 5.3 meters. So it's crazy in that sense. So it's easily maneuverable. You can maneuver it whichever way you want. But it's a large car, and it's also like 3,000 kilograms or 6,600 pounds. So it's one of the heaviest electric cars that's available in Europe. It's very heavy due to the 122 kilowatt hour LFP battery, because all the Blade batteries are of the LFP chemistry. And even though the Blade 2.0 is a higher energy density, it's not up there with NMC chemistry. So yeah, it naturally is a very heavy car, and that makes it very difficult to make it drive nicely. I still believe it's comfortable. It has dual chamber air suspension, of course. It has everything. If you wonder if it has a feature, it has the feature. But like, it doesn't feel like this sporty wagon to drive at all.
Right. So if this is like 115,000 euros in Europe, is it? And then, which is like 134,000 US dollars.
Yep.
Would you take this over a Taycan?
Personally, no.
Yeah.
For me, the driving dynamics is so important. I understand that it's not the same importance to everyone. We are all different customers, and BYD cars are extremely popular all around the world because they can offer such an amazing amount of features for the price. But personally, I would choose the driving dynamics. But I would love to take this one on a like long road trip and stress test it, and do all the fun stuff, do all the parallel parking with this kind of pivot maneuver that you see on the screen right now. It's so fun. I love that they put all the features into the car and let us test it. I respect that they developed this E3 platform, E-cubed platform, which is the BYD platform that enables this kind of pivoting and stuff. It's basically three motors and independent rear steering. This is available in other BYDs as well, not just this one, and I think there are more to come, yeah, I respect the decision to put in these kind of cool features. The problem here, I think, for Europe is the price. It's three times the price as in China, even though, you know, the European tariffs doesn't make up for that kind of difference at all, so right. There is definitely some kind of brand stuff going on here,
right? But the one in China is not. I believe the battery is smaller, and it's not as powerful. It's not like a tri-motor. It's like, you know, a single motor.
They have two versions in China, I believe, and the rear-wheel drive is also coming to Europe as the more affordable price. And that brings me to another point, is that when people talk about this this car, they talk about like the Chinese cars with 1,000 kilometers of range, but then they talk about like the rear-wheel drive model in the CLTC cycle, when reality is that we get the all-wheel drive model, and in the WLTP cycle, it's like 600 kilometers on 122 kilowatt hour battery. So that means it's incredibly inefficient.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what did you say? 6,600 pounds?
Yes, around there. A little bit less than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's extremely fun, and it was an amazing fun experience to test the car. And again, I respect that they put the engineering time into creating these fun features.
Oh, how did you like the mirror cameras?
I didn't like them. Not for me. Probably. I mean, they weren't too bad, but I think the resolution needs to be higher for mirror cameras like that.
Right. Any questions, Tom?
No, I was just looking up as a comparison a Taycan Cross Turismo. Taycan Cross Turismo Turbo weighs roughly 6,360 pounds. So it's kind of in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, over 1,000 pounds lighter.
A couple hundred pounds lighter. This was 6,600 pounds, right, William?
Yes.
Yeah, around there somewhere. Yeah.
And the Taycan. I'm sorry. I was looking at the gross vehicle weight rating.
The Taycan should be considerably lighter because this one weighs more than the Cayenne.
It's 5,200 pounds, so it is more than 1,000 pounds lighter. Yeah.
Right. So it comes shines through in the dynamics and everything too, but still, like you said, kudos to BYD for.
But I kind of want to say that I know it sounds like I'm talking this car down and stuff. This car is like a technological marvel in like a technology showcase sense. And I personally wish that this will trickle down to the more affordable BYDs so that we can get some cool features, so that we can get the flash charging on more affordable BYDs. And I think that would be amazing for the BYD brand in Europe.
Right. Yeah, the Yanglong brand is BYD as well, right? So that's going to have, it's above Denso. That's going to have the flash charging as well, right?
Yeah, and it's the top brand from BYD.
Right. William, what connector did you use to charge here? Was that the GBT?
No, we used the CCS too.
It was a CCS? Okay, I wasn't sure if they had that retrofitted yet.
Yeah, I was surprised as well, but they made their own CCS2 connector for the flash charger, and they also that's a very valid concern because it's very difficult for these Chinese manufacturers to find good suppliers or create CCS2 ports because they don't use it in the home market. It's natural, and sometimes they put very low quality or like not the proper rating of CCS2 ports for the different kind of stuff. And but here they developed their own CCS2 stuff. It had the BYD logo. So I think it's 800 amp nominal, 1500 amp boost. Because the boost is so short on these cars, these are extremely high voltage. And we took it to a normal kind of public charger as well. And we had interoperability issue, I believe, because this car is over 920 volts and not all chargers, even though they are like 400 or 500 kilowatt chargers, properly support cars over 920 volts. So it was just a crazy experience. Yeah.
I mean, even some Porsche vehicles have difficulty with some chargers here in the US where it has that moment where they calls for voltage and the charger's like, oh, wait a minute, you want how much? You
know, Lucid
vehicles have had
The gravity is crazy high voltage. I believe this one is a little bit higher voltage. I believe this is one of, if not the highest voltage electric vehicle in the world, a production vehicle in the world. Yeah.
Wow. So a lot of news this week. And actually, just before we came on the air, we saw that Doug Fields has left Ford, which is kind of a big story. There's not a whole lot to get. I don't think there's a lot of details out right now, so we don't want to spend a lot of time on it. But we should probably mention that he's like headed Ford's electrification push really now for what, 5 years has it been, Tom?
Just about 5 years, a little less than 5 years.
So today we saw the news that he's out, and then they're folding their electrification division.
Electric had reported that Ford's dissolving its standalone electric vehicle division and folding it into the EV digital and design into its global manufacturing operations. So it's, you know, whereas years ago, if you remember, Jim Farley announced they were going to split off electric vehicles. I mean, they started Model E and Doug was in charge of that because, you know, that's the right way to do it. It should have its own whole division with people just working on connected electric vehicles. And, you know, a couple of years later now, I guess, you know, maybe that's not the right way to do it. I think Ford is trying to figure things out. This doesn't sound like the best future proof. It sounds to me, which, you know, total speculation, is they're just worried more about next quarter's profits, that they're getting too much headwind from the stockholders, and that they're, you know, they took this huge $19 billion write off and you know, people that have their stock are mad that they're not getting dividends. So they'll focus on being profitable in the next couple of years, and, you know, whatever happens 4 or 5 years down the road, well, that's 4 or 5 years down the road. We'll be retired by then.
Wow.
That's what it looks like to me.
To it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So they may have folded the whole Model E kind of thing. I guess we'll get into details shortly and whatever we'll know. But I guess that's what, and by the time there's a little delay before this comes out, and so maybe in that interim the news will
come more out, information more. Will come out. Yeah, I'm sure. I would imagine. Well, I don't know. I was going to say I would imagine Ford will come out with some kind of statement, but they might not, because they might not want to talk about it. They might want this to just go away, you know.
True, true. But what we can talk about though is the Mercedes EQS. It is back with a mid-cycle refresh. If you can see it here on the screen properly. That's all I got. I don't have any good videos for it. So this is kind of funny. We'll get into this thing real quick. But so they've refreshed this quite extensively, but they haven't really done a whole lot of support on the media side. So there's, I don't see any like videos. So there's like a couple, there's a few photos. I'll flip through them real quick. There's like these half a dozen photographs or computer, you know, graphics. And that's it. And then for like the, so they've already had people drive them and make videos, contents, but they put them in a room with the car. The room is like really small and really poorly lit. And it's like, it's kind of, it was just kind of bizarre. I just like, I'm watching these videos and you used to seeing like Tomas from Autoglyph, you know, it looks, has, usually has like really nice, you know, production levels. And on this, this video is like, it's just the lighting in the room is so bad. And then the car doesn't look good. Like it's got this great metallic deep paint, but it looks really under these, this lighting condition, it looked terrible. All that out of the way. So last September, Mercedes put both the EQS and EQE on pause in the States. Domestic production was halted and new orders were halted. But now the EQS is back with a big refresh. It gives it a new look, higher voltage, big range, faster charging, optional steer-by-wire, which gives you a steering yoke, optional, and adaptive steering ratio, so you never have to turn more than 85 degrees. So first some numbers. The battery is up to 122 kilowatt hours, like the Denza Z9GT, up from 118, so they've upped that just a little bit. The EQS 40, like the entry trim, starts with a 112 kilowatt hour pack. So they have a special pack just for that. I believe they have a lower power motor for the 400 as well. The cells used in the pack are more energy dense or slightly different design. The voltage has shifted from a 400 volt to an 800 volt architecture. So peak charging power is up to 350 kilowatts now, up from 200 kilowatts. So that's seems like a proper amount of power, or relatively speaking, for a Western EV. Range is quoted as WLTP 925 kilometers, which is 575 miles on the EPA cycle. Man, I don't know. I'm thinking it might still get 500 miles, which is a lot of miles for 122 kilowatt hour battery. Power output spans from 367 horsepower in the 400 to 585 horsepower in the 580 4MATIC. That's the all-wheel drive, and they, and that car gets the gets to 60 miles an hour from zero in 4.2 seconds. Regenerative braking power is worth mentioning just because it's kind of crazy here. 385 kilowatts. It can generate. You know, say if you're going down the autobahn and you stomp on the brakes, I guess you're going to get a spike of 385 kilowatts into the battery for a short period of time. So Mercedes has taught its old dog some new tricks, but like, is it enough? I feel like the EQS, you know, was mostly hurt by its appearance before, and I'm not really sure this is a whole lot better. There are lots of other improvements. So it's got new drive motors. And the front motors get a disconnect, and there's a two-speed gearbox on the rear axle. It's got silicon carbide inverters, and all this was done to improve efficiency and get that monster range. But William, do you think there's enough improvements here and new features to move the needle on sales?
First, I just wanted to say that, your camera is back. It froze for a little bit. The total package here seems so much better than before. 800 volt architecture, 920 something kilometers WLTP is amazing. That's more than almost any other electric car that you can get. That seems great. Yeah, I feel like Mercedes has been a little bit of an underdog in the EV space because the cars have generally been pretty efficient, pretty good, pretty consistent charging curves, okay, like route planning, and they seemed like an underdog. And of course, now they are moving to this kind of 800 volt architecture. They have created the CLA, which is a fantastic car. They're coming out with the GLC, which is maybe a little bit less competitive to the iX3 and the EX60 in certain specifications. But then again, I haven't driven it yet. It might drive amazingly well. And the EQS will for sure drive amazingly well. And yeah, I just hope that they can make it closer to the S-Class in terms of luxury, because that was a big issue for EQS buyers, I think, that they expected S-Class luxury, but it was a little bit of a downgrade. Steer-by-wire is super cool. I think that's a cool new technology that many more cars will get as the years move along. Of course, the Germans are always a little bit conservative. They use a little bit more time getting this into cars. But I think it's just good upgrades. Of course, the car looks mostly the same, aside from the new grille design and stuff. And I think a lot of people don't like the design. I think it looks much better in person than on every picture I've seen, but I still think the normal S-Class looks better.
Interesting you say that. I feel like they're trying to position the EQS to become like the electric S-Class at some point. I'm not sure if that's really, I don't know if that's good or bad or whatever, but that's just what I felt they were trying to do. Have you driven? You've driven the Cybertruck, right?
Yeah, I've driven the Cybertruck.
So that's really the only other vehicle that has like this kind of like yoke style steering wheel, also with
and the Lexus that, and the new Lexus.
The Lexus is it? Is the Lexus? Can you? Yeah, it has a
real steer by wire. Yeah,
2015 yep. Or something like Lexus.
Right. 450, whatever they call them, R-Set 450, yeah.
Right. I've driven that. So, I don't know, what do you think about that kind of steering in a car? So you've driven it in the Cybertruck, you know how it kind of feels in that it's kind of a big hulking vehicle with this little tiny steering wheel. What do you think about it in this?
In an EQS, it would probably fit it as good as in a truck. I mean, it's kind of weird that Tesla put it into the Cybertruck, I think. But in my opinion, it's a good implementation and it felt right. It's the right way. But they have the right steering wheel because they put like the yoke inside the Model S without steer by wire. That was not the best choice in the world. And but in the Cybertruck, they have a better steering wheel, regardless of steer by wire or not. And it has a great tuned steer by wire with rebel steer, and it turns on a dime. It's a good implementation. I think steer by wire is cool. And in an EQS, sure, it's a luxury feature. I think, and it's even optional, which is interesting. That means that there is a significant difference between the cars that you choose, because if you choose a car without steer by wire, there are like extra components that needs to be put into the car. I'm interested to see what kind of how that works out for them. But I think steer by wire is just another luxury cool feature, and I trust the Germans to do it right.
Yeah, I don't see that being an option that a lot of people tick. It depends where in what markets. You know, Mercedes owners are typically older, more conservative in many ways. I don't see, you know, the average person, you know, in their 50s or 60s, buying a $140,000 Mercedes, saying, "Yeah, I'll take that thing that I've never ever driven before on any car," you know, sure, that won't be a problem for me. You know, I can say and pay extra for it, right? It's an option. So I don't think the uptake on that will be big. I also agree with what William said as far as this next generation EQS seems to have a lot of great technical improvements. And the exterior styling is tweaked, not majorly tweaked. I think that's the main problem that the EQS had, I think, here in the U.S. at least. I don't know. I can't really speak for Europe, but it bombed here in the U.S. They didn't sell them. They couldn't get rid of them. And I think it was because part of the whole Mercedes, you know, aura is you want to be seen in a Mercedes, you know, but do you want to be seen in this egg-shaped thing that really didn't seem to have a personality, you know? That's not really changed that much here with this, in my opinion. I don't see this being, what saves the EQS. I don't know how sales were in Europe. Were they good in Europe? I really haven't followed that, but I know they were dismal in the U.S.
Yeah. And not that great.
Are they even going to bring this back to the U.S. now, Dom? Was that in the announcement?
I believe so.
You believe so?
They had it on the U.S. media site, but they didn't convert it to EPA numbers either. So yeah. Probably coming back to the U.S.
The range was never a problem. The first Mercedes EQS 350 that I did a 70-mile-an-hour higher range test with, I finished up with just under 400 miles. I think it was 396 miles or something like that. The only vehicle I've ever driven farther is a Lucid Air at 70 miles an hour. So range was never a problem. If it added another 30 or 40 miles of range, that's virtually meaningless as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. But they didn't dramatically refresh the looks. And I think that was the biggest problem, at least for our market.
Yeah, I think it's the same for Europe, the looks. I totally agree. It didn't sell very well. And when the normal S-Class looks so much better, everybody that can afford the EQS can also like stretch, or it depends on the spec, of course, but they would rather just have the combustion variant. It's what, and also the older buyers as well, like you said. It's actually the same problem with the Lexus, because that's, mm-hmm. at least in Norway and Europe, it's seen as kind of like an old person brand. Mm-hmm. I agree. They won't tick the option for the yoke steering wheel and the steer-by-wire. It's very scary, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know some buyers, just in general, of electric cars do care so much, at least here in Europe, about the range number. It's so important to them that it's close to 1,000 kilometers. Right now, because it's you can compare it to a diesel car, and I in my opinion it doesn't matter anymore. We have sold the range thing mostly for most people except towing, but because we have great charging, and that's what matters for road trip speed, is that you have okay efficiency, okay range, and good charging, and you can get anywhere as fast as you are the limiting factor as a human, but some people are they really want to see the range number on the thing they buy be as high as their diesel car, and that's a thing in Europe. So I mean, it could help in some way, but I totally agree. The looks is the main issue with the EQS.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to look up now. What was the EQS's EPA range rating, Dom? Do you know the previous version when they ended it? Had to be close to 400 miles EPA.
Yeah, it must have been.
Which must have been. Yeah, so, I mean, it was always one of the longest range electro. I'm seeing if I could look it up now. It was always one of the longest range EVs that you could buy. So, of course, more range the better. But I don't think that, at least here, was the issue. Let me see.
Right. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, it's a refresh. So they can only do so much with it. You know, like it looks wise, for instance, like they're really constrained by that shape, basically. Yeah. So there's not a whole lot they can do without just starting all over again, basically. As far as like appearance goes, they can painted like a different fascia on the front of it and on the rear, but it's basically you can still see that the original shape there, you know.
Yeah, and I love the concept EQS. I got a chance to drive one at a very small press drive event, back, you know, a year before it launched. It was actually my my photo on my X account for like 4 years, my banner photo of me standing in front of it. I just replaced it recently. And the concept was so cool. It was the total concept car that we drove. It was like plastic, you know, on the inside, and, you know, like you couldn't open the door. They had to open the door for you and close it, you know? So it was total concept. And they let us drive it on this airstrip, just slowly back and forth for video and stuff. Right. But I thought it looked so cool. And then when the production version came out, like so many times, it was like, oh, really? Oh. Mm-hmm. And it just never did it. And I looked it up. It looks like it was 390 miles. I don't know if I found the highest range one, but that was the EPA range rating here. I can't imagine. I mean, it's only got, what is it? Got 6 more kilowatt hour, the battery pack. You know,
four
more kilowatt hour. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not going to be that much more range rating. I mean, they might squeeze some more range out of efficiencies and powertrain efficiencies and forth.
It's a lot more efficient, the powertrain too. They've upgraded all the motors and put the two speed transmission in and all that stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, still, physics is physics with a certain amount of kilowatt hour. You're only going to squeeze so much out of it. But I'd be interested to see how much more than 390. I'd be shocked if it was more than, you know, 425 or 430. I'd be shocked, you know, 20 or 30 more miles EPA. But we'll see.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. It's nice to see it back, though. And I kind of feel like Mercedes is not going to sell like a ton of these now, even though it's much better. But I think it's still important to, you know, for Mercedes to go through these steps. Because then their next one, the like from the ground up car, it's got to be at least as solid as the S-Class. It has to be like the best S-Class ever, basically, is what they need to do with it.
It's a little bit weird to me that they put in 800-volt architecture from 400-volt architecture in this car instead of just refreshing everything to the new design language that they use for everything right now. They could have done that, it seems.
Mm-hmm. That's a kind of expensive step to take when, you know, I'm not sure if it's going to pay off. Like, I don't know how much it costs to re-engineer that, but it's in many millions of dollars. I don't know. Yeah. Will they sell enough of them to kind of make up for that change? Yeah. I don't know, but
I don't know. I don't think they're going to sell a lot of them. They didn't sell a lot of the first gen. And just for the hell of it, I looked up the used ones. William, you might get a kick out of this. This is how much this vehicle flopped here. You could get 2023, which is like 3 years old, barely 3 years old, but 30,000 miles for $35,000.
Oh, sign me up. That's amazing. That's an amazing car for 35.
And wow. Here's another one, same price, 35,000. Here's a 2022 450 plus.
400s?
Yeah, that was a 450 4MATIC all-wheel drive, 32,000 miles, 2023, $34,995.
Wow, that's a crazy deal.
That's less than a new Chevy Bolt.
Right, that's kind of nuts.
I would drive around in an egg for that price. That's the thing, for sure.
That's because the only thing wrong with the EQS is this looks. I mean, it's a brilliant car, and it comes in SUV flavors too. So I'm not exactly sure. They didn't show the SUV, if how that's been updated, you know, or what's going on with that. They just showed the sedan. So So use SUVs and EQS sedans, man. It's like one of the best buys, and they're brilliant to drive. They're highway cars. So comfortable. Yeah. Plus, I mean, it's not quite BMW i7 levels, but it's not far. It's pretty close. Yeah. Absolutely. As far as like just comfort, and it's just a great driving experience.
Yeah.
And some of them have rear wheel steer as well, right? So. It's just, a lot of features, and if that those prices are just ridiculous on the used market. There's, man, there's a bunch of people are going to luck into these cars, not kind of realizing, you know, and they see it and they go for it, and then, and they got this really swank car for.
Oh, God, yeah. $35,000. And that's the listed price at a dealership. You know that you could negotiate. You could probably roll out of that with like $33,000 if you show up with, you know, cash in hand. I mean, that's just nuts for that, you know, that yeah. much car, you know. But anyway, that just goes to show you how it just, the EQS just, it didn't resonate here. People just didn't like it.
Right. It'll be interesting to see if this new refresh gets that kind of, that level of depreciation, because that's, you know, just ridiculous.
They didn't do enough visually, Dom, in my opinion. Like I said, you're buying a Mercedes. You want to be seen in a Mercedes. You want people, I mean, you know, not everybody obviously feels this way, but a lot of people, you know, they're driving around something that costs them $130,000 or whatever the, you know, a new EQS is going to cost. You know, they want people to look and say, wow, look at that sharp car. Not like, look at that bulbous egg on wheels. Like, the hell is that thing? You know, that's what it looked like to me. You know, I just, that first gen was just not a good looker. And if you're spending that much money on a car, it's got to look good. You know?
Right. Well, let's move on. First, let's take a short break here. We'll be right back with more right after this message from our sponsor.
The Batteries Included podcast is sponsored by EVChargingStations.com. If you drive an electric vehicle or you're planning to, this site is packed with comprehensive charger reviews, detailed DC fast charging graphs, and the latest news from all of the fast charging networks. You'll find real-world testing, easy-to-understand comparison, and deep dives into how different electric vehicles actually charge. Before you buy an EV charger or plan your next road trip, make sure to bookmark EVChargingStations.com and make smarter charging decisions.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
All right. So there is quite a bit of news in this week. One small thing I thought we should touch on a little bit is the final edition Tesla S and X Plaid. So to mark the end of Tesla Model S and Model X, Tesla is inviting customers an opportunity to buy one of 100 signature edition Model X plaids or one of 250 Tesla Model S plaids for $159,420 each, either SUV or sedan, same price. So Tesla has sold over 750,000 of these cars over the past 14 years. 160,000 for a new plaid, though. I think that's close to what Kyle paid for his back in the day. But
yeah,
man, now plaids, what, 100,000? I didn't actually look that up, but I believe it's really around there, right?
They had a lot of price increases.
I don't know. Tom, who's going to buy this? Like, how big a fan? Because you know you're going to roll off. Speaking of depreciation, roll off the lot, that car is going to lose $50,000 in value.
Yeah, but you know, people are going to look at them as collector's items. It's a collector's item. It's not just a regular vehicle. You know, so I mean, in that regard, it might not. You know, probably will, but it might not. You know, because it's a limited supply. It was a very, particularly the Model S, extraordinarily important car in American automotive history, in my opinion. And this is like the farewell, you know, it wouldn't be worth as much as the first 100. If you had one of the signature series, you know, the first builds that they had, that would be the better collector's item. But I understand why, you know, Tesla's doing this, and I bet you they'll sell them. You know, will they hold value? Probably not. But, you know, there's people that spent a lot of money on limited edition runs on cars. Remember when the GMC Hummer Omega came out in 2025? Yeah. That was $160,000. You know, and they sold them. They sold like, I think, 1,800 of them. So, you know, and you know, why not sell a Signature Series Model Plaid or Model X for around the same amount, you know? I know the Hummer's a lot more vehicle physically, but you know.
Right, right. Yeah. You park that in your driveway, you know where your money went.
Yeah.
Event. With Model S, you kind of have to drive it to experience where your money went. You know, unique vehicles, and they've done a lot. So, farewell, Model S, Model X. I doubt Kyle's going to buy one at this point. He's got, he still has his original Plaid. So, let's talk about something else. So, Tesla related on EVChargingStations.com. I saw this article. It's a great new website. Anything, everything you need to know about charging. So Tesla Supercharger for business calculator. Check estimated costs and revenues. So Tesla has made its Tesla Supercharger for business program more transparent. It's upgraded. It's the Supercharger for business website by adding a calculator, which estimates costs and revenues. The new tool gives us some glimpses of costs and what to expect for building a third-party DC fast charging station within the Tesla Supercharging network. So, Tom, I think you had this up. So they've introduced this program, the Supercharger for business, late last year, I believe, right?
Yep. They opened it last year. The thing was, they were only letting you buy the V3 superchargers. And so I was kind of like, really? You know, like I think most operators now don't really want to buy 400 volt architecture DC fast charging equipment for their sites.
Right.
You know, everybody's pretty much moving on to the 800,000 volt systems. So I thought it was odd that Tesla wasn't going to sell their V4s. But now that the V3s are retired and it's the V4s, now you can buy a complete V4 system. And they added this cost calculator on site, which was I found it very interesting, because one of the things that and Kyle and I have talked about this in the past. One of the things that kind of bother us is none of the DC fast charge manufacturers, Kempower, Alpitronic, you know, the companies that make this, they'll never discuss price with you. They'll never you know, you've got to be a serious customer for them to sit down and put their pencil on paper and work out prices. And even then, it's highly dependent on how many you're going to buy and, you know, what level of customer you are. So I thought it was really cool that Tesla put this on their site. Now, obviously, these are rough numbers, but they do give you, based on how many stalls and where you are, a rough idea of what it's going to cost and the payback period, based on, you know, how much you charge per kilowatt hour and so forth. So I think what this does, if anything, is the people that don't know anything about this, that, look, I own this big shopping mall or something, and I'm thinking about putting a DC fast charger site location in there, but I have no idea what it's going to cost me. They can go to the site now, plug in some numbers and say, okay, this is the ballpark. It's going to cost about $500,000 to do this, you know, and obviously, like I said, that will change from there. But they can at least get an idea of what it's going to cost and how long the payback period is going to be based on the volume that you're going to get in that area. So I think it's really cool that Tesla put this thing out. And, you know, it's an asset to the industry, not just for Tesla, I think, because it kind of demystifies what the approximate cost to do something like this is going to be.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So, and people can look at this and maybe get inspired to start their own charging network. I mean, I'm looking at this as a 15-year payback. Over 15 years, the average payback per year is $887,000 on this particular site. They have, I don't know what, this is an 8-stall site in the Florida area, North Florida area, close to the interstate, actually. Mm-hmm.
Lot of that's estimated on what they're basing the usage is going to be 10 years from now. You know, they're expecting electric vehicle adoption to go up, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
true.
You know, you really got to dive into these numbers. It's not, you can't bank on this, you know, and they show a very short payback period, which I think is extremely aggressive. But they know the numbers. Right. They know the numbers. They operate these sites. So, you know, either they're lying or, you know, this is what you can expect. So
Right. Well, hopefully they're not lying. That would be pretty bad. Yeah. I wouldn't expect them to be.
Well, they can be, I wouldn't say lying. They could be very optimistic with throughput and utilization of the site numbers, Don. You know, so, you know, I'd love to see, you know, what they're talking about. You know, because, I mean, on this site, I think it was $500,000 that you have plugged in. You know, on a 5-year payback on a $500,000 site, the throughput on those that must be huge, you know, and how much are you charging extra per kilowatt hour? I mean, I didn't dive into the numbers that you have there. It would seem like the site would have to be fully utilized 24/7.
So it's interesting. They give you a few tools, right? You can choose the number of supercharger posts and set it for installation per cost, because, you know, slightly it could cost between $45,000 to $65,000 per post. Yeah. Electricity selling costs. Then it has expected utilization. But it only goes up to 750 kilowatt hours per day, which I don't know if that's, it seems low. I don't know.
Well, they probably site. Tesla would know.
They should know though.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I mean that's so like you're saying. I mean that's probably, you know, 20 cars, you know, if you're, you know, if the average car is going to take in, I think the average DC fast charge session, I had data on this a while ago, the average DC fast charge session in the country, I think takes in around 40 kilowatt hour. So, so that would be, you know, 20 sessions, you know, 20 cars in the day, which seems low, as you said, you know, but
I mean, depending on where it's at, like this location was right beside the I-10, you know, the major thoroughfare, and, you know, an exit away from other charging. There's no other charging right at that exit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. But look at the price there. Like what's it say the electricity cost is? 6 cents.
I have the electricity selling price at 0.115, because that's the approximately
11 cents.
Tallahassee. 11 cents a kilowatt hour. That's approximately. That's the selling price for
you got to put that up like 45 cents and the
1.5.
Yeah. I'd put it at like 40 cents, 40 ish.
Yeah.
And then the cost, there's no way you're getting it at 6 cents. I mean, what's the electricity cost in Tallahassee? Right. It's got to be 20 like cents or something.
No, it's only like for retail customers, it's like 11 or 12 cents, I believe.
Yeah, but then you're gonna get hit with demand charges on a DC fast charge site. You gotta push that up over 20 cents a kilowatt hour. You gotta. So I mean, I'd have to look at what the demand charges in the area are gonna be, but
if you do all this stuff and then you get your number set up, but then you have to remember that Tesla will take, so Tesla's cut of this.
Yes.
Is 10 cents per kilowatt hour, and that gets you into the system, so all the Teslas will, you know, will be able to navigate to your location of your chargers.
Yeah. They're going to make more than you.
They're going to probably make more than you. Probably. Yeah. The dealer always wins.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I've learned to never start a DC fast charging network. Not a good business decision.
I would agree.
But I appreciate transparency here. There are a lot of like B2B stuff that just needs to become transparent, in my opinion. Lots of it is just hidden, and price fixing, special deals. It's a little bit annoying. I wish some of these manufacturers would go out just like this and just say exactly what it costs. That would be great.
So sticking with charging for a second, we had some big news this week that IONNA is going to take over and upgrade Circle K's EV charging. Circle K and IONNA have announced a strategic collaboration with an ambitious goal, expanding to more than 350 sites branded as Rechargeries at Circle K. So IONNA calls their recharging stations Rechargeries. So this will be Rechargeries at Circle K. As part of this initiative, IONNA will take over operations of Circle K's existing U.S. charging portfolio. The plan includes rapidly converting and upgrading approximately 85 current Circle K charging sites. Tom, so this was a little unexpected for me, at least. Circle K has invested like a good amount of money and energy to start up this network. I hadn't heard much about it in the last couple of years, though, to be honest. But they had, you know, pretty decent hardware. I think Brandon Flash worked with them on getting that network up, and I believe they had like 180 kilowatt.
Yeah, they were the ABB Terra 184s, which is 180 kilowatt. That's right. A unit. So I just, you know, from, you know, Brandon left to go work for Alpatronic, and from what I understand, a lot of his team left too. And, you know, I think a lot of the people that were really managing it left for greener pastures. And from what feedback that I got from followers was that a lot of the stations were broken. They weren't maintained, you know, and that doesn't surprise me because, you know, Circle K, they have a business model. You know, they sell food. They manage convenience stores. They're not a CPO, you know, and it's not that easy to just take on this other level of business. It's a completely different business, you know. So I think it's a good move. You know, they have over 7,300 locations. They're the second largest convenience store chain in the U.S., second only to 7-Eleven. And a lot of 7-Eleven sites don't have gasoline. They're like the older sites that are in strip malls and stuff. So they may be the largest physical convenience store chain that bases around having, you know, gas and offerings. Over 7,300 stores. They currently have about 95 locations in the U.S. that have DC fast chargers. They've got about 10 or 15 in Canada too.
Yeah. It's owned by Couche-Tard, which is a Quebec company. Yeah. Throw that out there.
Yeah. So I don't really know what's going to happen to those sites because IONNA right now is focusing on the U.S. Even though IONNA stands for Ions of North America, they're exclusively working in the U.S. And our Canadian friends constantly remind me to keep reminding IONNA that IONNA stands for Ions in North America, and please don't forget about us. So I don't know what's going to happen to the Circle K stores in Canada. But of the ones in the U.S., and there's like 95-ish, 93, 95 I counted in the map, IONNA's only taking over 85 of them, which is kind of weird. There's like six or seven sites that are being orphaned. And I did speak to Brandon about that, and he said he thinks that those might be some of the sites where they had very low power available, and they put in low power sites. I think they even have a couple locations that have the what's the name of the company that went out of business that Kyle just bought a bunch of their used?
Freewire,
yeah. I think a couple of their sites have Freewire. So I could understand IONNA saying, you know what? We're not dealing with those. We don't want those sites. You know, we want the sites where you have a good, stable grid connection, you know, where we could just rip your chargers out. Another thing that I found out is a lot of their infrastructure on these locations had conduit already installed for bigger wires that could accommodate 400 kilowatt chargers. It wasn't limited to the 180 kilowatt units that they have, which they could have put in smaller conduit. They kind of future-proofed it in case they needed to have higher powered units. So a lot of these locations won't need underground work. They won't need to rip up parking lots and stuff. They might be able to just plop in their chargers there. I don't know what IONNA's going to do. I know IONNA's plan is to have minimum of four chargers, ideally the minimum of five, but in some locations they can only have four with eight bays. A lot of the Circle K locations have less than that, so they may want to trench a little bit and add another charger so they can have the amount, the number of plugs that they want. But the 85 of the existing sites are going to be converted to IONNA rechargeries, and over the next couple of years, more than 350 Circle Ks are going to have IONNA rechargeries. Now, when you think about that, you know, IONNA talked about by the end of this decade having, more than 1,000 locations or 1,000 locations and 30,000. No, it wasn't 1,000. It was 30,000 plugs.
Okay. 30,000 plugs, yeah.
30,000 plugs. So it would be about 3,000 locations because they're averaging 10 stalls per location. But 350 is like 10% of their overall goal. So that's how big of a deal this is for IANA. Like, you know, the Circle K locations could literally be 10% of IANA's footprint by the end of this decade. You know, which is crazy when you think about
it.
You know, so, you know, and IANA already had before this agreements with Wawa, Sheetz, and Casey's food stores. So now this is the fourth chain, convenience store chain that they have deals with now. And there's still a lot of other chains out there that would probably, you know, are probably looking for a partner. There's at least 10 other major convenience franchise chains across the country. So this was a really significant move for IANA.
All right.
I find it a little bit interesting. I just want to chime in here really quick on that Circle K basically gave up to IANA. IANA is absolutely fantastic, and it's, of course, an upgrade on the sites. With what I experienced in the US with IANA, I believe it's like it's the best network. It's better than most installation in Europe. They think about amenities and everything. And I totally think that it's an upgrade for Circle K from what I've seen and experienced with Circle K sites in the US. But it's very different over here because Circle K is one of the largest charge point operators in the Nordics. They have amazing sites, great hardware, Alpitronic Hyper 400. They have canopies. It's very similar to IANA in a sense over here. So I find it a little bit interesting that they gave the job to IANA in the US.
Right. Yeah. Well, it sounds like they have the
Go ahead,
Dom. Oh, sorry. It sounds like they have the existing expertise already in-house, but it's just in Europe. So they just need to replicate that team into US. But I guess maybe, I don't know how maybe the different markets are segmented, you know, like maybe there's a lot of different management for the US portion of the company, and
probably
the European portion of the company.
Of course there is, and you know, I wouldn't put really blame on the team. I know Brandon was a big major part of the team that installed that infrastructure here in the Circle K network. You know, I think it was more of a policy for the company, you know, that look, this is what we're going to do. And you know, I think they just realized that maybe they bit off more than they can chew here, and it's better to just hand it off to somebody. We don't know what deal they have with IANA. They might get a cut of the revenue on their sites. You know, they might do like what Tesla's doing and say kind of like, you know, Tesla's taking a cut to manage the network. They might take a cut for providing the real estate. They might say, you know, 5 cents a kilowatt hour or something like, who knows? You know, I know if I was running a convenience store franchise like this, it's hard enough to just deal with that and your employees and quality control and food. You know, I would certainly want to hand it off to an experienced partner like IANA to just do it right. And you manage everything out there. You deal with utilities, you deal with maintenance when the things break. You know, we'll keep the parking lot clean. We'll empty the trash cans. We'll fill the windshield washer dispensaries for you. Just bring your customers into our store to buy our coffee and sandwiches and stuff, and you manage everything out there. I think it's a better way to go.
Yeah.
And this reminded me of something when you said that, because IONITY in Europe, which is basic, it's not IONA, I wouldn't call it the same thing, but it's automakers going together, creating a large charging network.
Many of the same automakers too.
Yeah. It's actually very interesting, but they started out getting site deals with Circle K, and they put their chargers into Circle K locations in the beginning. And from what I've heard now, Circle K is not extending the lease of many of these locations. And that's very, very interesting because it feels like it's not the same thing, of course, but they did do this kind of same type of deal in the beginning in the Nordics.
So it's the opposite. What you did in the Nordics is, you know, they let other companies come in and now they're saying, no, we'll do this.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not extending the lease and they are installing fantastic like hardware, canopies, whatever. They're building out their own Circle K network. Yeah.
And the exact opposite's happening here. They built out their own Circle K network and they're saying, you know what? You do this.
Yeah, exactly.
That is pretty bizarre. It's kind of like what Walmart's going to be doing here. You know, Walmart allowed Electrify America and a number of other, you know, CPOs to install their chargers in the parking lot. And, you know, they decided, you know what, that, you know, we don't need them making money on in our parking lots. We're going to do it. So, you know, I actually am editing a video now. I'm going to put out another Walmart charging video probably tomorrow or the next day. The first Walmart location opened up here in New Jersey. And the crazy thing is, it is the northernmost location, Walmart location in the country. And by a long shot, the next northernmost location is in Arkansas. So currently all Walmart's locations are deep south or in Texas, Arizona, Florida. And then you've got this, like, you know, 500-mile gap, and then there's one up in New Jersey. Like to think that they put it in there because I'm there, and I've been covering them very closely, and, you know, they let me be the only person to interview them so far. I'm the only person to actually get an interview with Adam Happel, the general manager of their EV charging. So, you know, I think New Jersey could thank me because Walmart needed to get one close to me so I can make more content.
Yeah, that's probably.
You are indeed New Jersey. You are a New Jersey man, after all. All right. Real quickly, so we shouldn't spend a whole ton of time on this car because it's not coming here, but this is really big global product news. Just not especially significant for the U.S., but still, it needs a small mention at least. The Volkswagen ID.3 has received an extensive refresh itself and is now called the ID.3 Neo. So briefly, it looks a lot more like the VW Golf. It's got a lot more buttons. It's got more efficient motors. It gets three different trim levels, three different batteries, and three different motors and three different battery sizes. And they kind of mix and match a bit. I think the bottom trim gets, you know, the small battery and the small motor. And then you mix and match for the other two trims. So the largest battery is 79 kilowatt hours. I believe the smallest one is 50. So 79 kilowatt hours, they say, gives the car 630 WLTP kilometers, which is well over it's not over 500 miles. It's over 300 miles, well over 300 miles.
Actually, a pretty good range for the size of car.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy how much range it's WLTP, so I'm not exactly sure what that should be, like EPA wise, you know, like more 600, and then in doing the kilometers to miles conversion as well. But I'm thinking it's got to be at least 350 miles. It sounds like it's a lot to say out loud, but the most powerful motor is a 228 horsepower, so not super. Super duper powerful, but you know, that's lots of power. Volkswagen hasn't released charging or acceleration times yet. So, William, ID.3 actually sold very well in Germany this past year or so, and it does pretty well in Norway also. It was the number one selling car there in January. What does this
in Germany, right? Not Norway because it's rear-wheel drive, but. It actually did pretty well in Norway as well in the beginning because it was the first like real offering from Volkswagen in terms of electric cars aside from the E-Up and the E-Golf and stuff. But this was a proper range, fantastic car in my opinion. I love the ID.3. I think it's great. It had severe software issues in the beginning And it also had like heater failure and stuff that made a lot of people angry, of course. But that's all fixed. The software is better than ever. And this Neo version gets an even newer software. That's the ID software 6.0 with, as I understand it, an Android automotive layer so that you can download apps and stuff. And the software kind of after like the 5.4 software that we got in 2024, I believe, 2025, early 2025 maybe, but that helped a lot with like stability. The route planner is fantastic. And yeah, I think it's a great little car. It drives amazingly well. It's a little bit underpowered compared to the competition, in my opinion. But I think I have a little bit of a different perspective since I test so many different powerful cars. But this new APP 310 motor, I believe. No, 350 motor should be super efficient. This is for Volkswagen Engineering. They make their own motors for these cars, and they prove to be extremely efficient. I watched like a Munro video of that was the APP 550 motor disassembly, and there are some really cool engineering inside these motors, and they are actually like class leading in terms of efficiency and the kind of package that they can get inside the car. It's pretty great engineering, actually.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I was not aware. I have the, like, it's not the ID3 is not on our radar here, so.
No, but they make these motors for the other ID cars as well. Not this specific motor, but they have a more powerful one for the ID4. And you don't get the ID7 either. That's an amazing car as well. Yeah.
Tom's driven that.
Yeah. Super great cruiser.
Tom loves the ID7. And Kyle loved it too.
What a great cruiser. I mean, you know, super road trip vehicle. I mean, as far as comfort goes, at least.
Yeah, with the DCC, it's fantastic, and the charging is like these.
It's not fine.
It's fine. It's the best charging 400 volt cars on the market.
It's fine. It's in my opinion. It's not world class. It's not, you know, 7 minutes to 97%, but it's I would be fine with that.
This dash, it looks great. I mean, I think William.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think we need to talk about that just really quick. They have gone back to all physical buttons for both the steering wheel and the climate controls and everything. Those were all haptic buttons, and they got a lot of complaints. And yeah, this seems much better.
Yeah,
that's a huge thing for this car and the ID lineup moving forward as well.
I want one of these in GTI trim. Like,
yeah,
that's what I want.
I've heard some rumors.
Yeah, they got to make a spicy version of this. Can they put a? They can't make this all-wheel drive, can they?
They have not the ID3, I believe. They won't do that.
They have a for all the ID for all, maybe.
You don't maybe need that. Just give it a bunch more horsepower and have fun with it.
Right.
Yeah. If you put the most powerful motor in this one, it would be amazing.
So I'm looking at this, just the steering wheel and the layout of the dash behind it. Really reminds me of like old school Volkswagen Golf.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a little retro.
Yeah, there are themes. You choose it yourself. What kind of theme you want and stuff. And yeah, it's kind of cool. And it has a camping mode for the first time ever in a Volkswagen electric car. Not dog mode, but they have a camping mode. They're getting closer. So I am excited about the camping mode. Yeah.
Camping mode is pretty awesome. You don't have to be in the car though, right? It's like a dog mode kind of basically?
Yeah, it's basically a dog mode with it, without the surveillance stuff. And yeah.
Okay. Yes, that's... Yeah, every EV needs to have like that camp mode or dog mode or something so you can leave the air conditioning or heat on while you're not there. It's just the best. So, real quickly, you think this is going to do well for Volkswagen?
I'm not entirely sure at the right price, of course. I don't know the pricing, if they will increase the price over the normal ID3, but since the ID3 already does well, this does everything better. There is no no doubt it'll probably sell better as well. And as electrification increases in Europe, I believe this is just a fantastic first car.
Yeah, I was thinking it would. I was just thinking it would go up against the Renault 5, but this has like a lot more range than those cars.
Yeah, the Renault 5 is amazing in its own regard, but this one has a lot more stuff going on, and it's rear-wheel drive, so it's.
Right on. One other piece of news, I wanted to hit real quick too. Oh man, there's a bunch of small things, so I won't go through all my notes on them, but I should mention that the Lucid Motors has a new CEO this week, which is kind of worth mentioning. His name is Mr. Napoli. I have it written down here. Must have his first name. Silvio Napoli. Napoli. But anyway, he's based in Switzerland. He's been the chairman and CEO of Schindler Group for a while. So he's in a sector that has its ups and downs. But
I got that.
It's an elevator company.
Yeah.
But the auto industry is, you know, something totally different. So, I would like to see. I know Lucid needs someone in place to instill some financial discipline. But I worry a little bit. But he might not have enough car industry experience. But I don't know. Tom, you have any thoughts on this, real quick?
I really, honestly, I missed this in the newsfeed. I didn't even know it until you just said this. So I'd like to look into the guy's background a little bit. I don't want to really be too critical. I would, on the surface, say, yeah, I prefer if it was somebody that, you know, was in this space. But there's a lot of smart people out there in other industries that, you know, can run almost a company in any industry because they're just good managers. And so that could be why they handpicked this person. I don't know. I don't need know enough about them to really comment on that, but good luck.
Right. I mean, Lucid's had quite a week. They also got made a deal with another deal with Uber. So they've got another, was $200 million. I think they invested more in company stock and then committed to buy another 15,000 vehicles on top of the original 20,000 vehicle order they have. And then an affiliate of the Saudi Investment Fund, which is the main backer, I guess, has committed another investment of $550 million of convertible preferred stock, which I guess puts the company on firmer financial ground ahead of rolling out its, you know, lower cost, higher volume, what's called Cosmos.
Yeah.
Cosmos midsize.
Yeah.
That, and also need to mention that the BMW i3 has gotten over 50,000 orders, but its first victim might be another BMW, at least in the US. So the BMW iX, despite having gotten, it's just got a refresh. But it's going to be discontinued in the US now after the 2026 model year. So despite being like a pretty decent EV, I believe Kyle likes it quite a bit. It has a, you know, nice range. It's
super comfortable and quiet.
Yeah, I really.
It's actually like pretty great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just didn't really catch the imagination of people here for some. I thought it might, but it did not.
Yeah.
Well,
it was expensive, Tom. It was expensive, you know. And I mean, BMW all along kind of said that this is a stopgap vehicle, like the. Till the Neue class comes out, you know, it was a one-off, you know, that they didn't use that platform for anything else. And it was kind of just like, we need to get, you know, a decent long range electric SUV out there until we have the Neue class. And, you know, they did a pretty darn good job with it.
Yeah. It's one of the longest range, SUVs on the market.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting little, unicorn, you know, if you want to buy like on the used market, the 2026 iX, it's a refresh. It's still like a lot, you know, I don't even know what the refresh included off the top of my head, but it's probably going to be a lot nicer than the 25, right? So Let's keep an eye out for that.
It has a little bit of a larger battery, and I think it's a little bit more sporty, and there wasn't like a major upgrade or anything, but it's a nice little,
All right. So I guess the idea is that they've got the iX3 coming. It's just a little bit smaller. I think it's like 7 inches shorter, but it might be more space efficient inside, I feel like.
I think the
BMW managers expect the i3 will get all the love if they share mm-hmm. a showroom floor here. So I guess it costs money to support a model in a market like this. Every model they have, takes a specific amount of money just for the marketing and all the different things that automakers have to do with their distribution chain.
And to be honest, the Neue Klasse it's kind of two generations ahead of the iX. It has so much faster charging, so much like the vehicle ECUs. It's a completely different architecture of the entire car. It has cell to body. It has like the energy density of the battery pack. It has like everything that's just, it's just a leap forward.
Yeah. Good stuff. So, Tom, I want to head out of here real quick, but last week you did a recharge rescue, and people can go to the State of Charge YouTube channel and check it out. But you showed us last week a burnt out plug from your most recent mission. And let me just pull up your video here. I might freeze up. I guess sometimes I'm freezing up.
You're freezing up a lot today when you bring pictures up. I went down to Maryland. This was a good recharge rescue. I didn't have to fly. It was only about 240, 250 miles from my house. So I was able to drive. And the gentleman's house, Brian, his name was, who I went to, he's like, he actually has a YouTube channel called the EV OG, because he's been driving EVs since 2013. He's owned 10 different electric vehicles, and he had two NEMA 1450 plugs in his garage. One of them did the typical NEMA 1450 melt job. You could see on the desk, if you're watching on YouTube there, I have the one that melted and the one that didn't melt. But I wasn't just going to fix the one in his garage that didn't melt and then leave him with the other one, even though he said, well, just replace it with an EV-rated NEMA 1450. I didn't feel comfortable with that because it appeared as though the electrician he hired didn't do a good job previously, and I was correct. Even the wire going to the outlet that didn't have a problem yet was undersized. They had used number 8-gauge Romex. That's not sufficient for a 50 amp circuit with a continuous load. So we had to rip everything out. We had to pull all the wires out from his panel, in his basement, up into the attic, down into the garage. We ran over 120 feet of number 6 MC, metal clad cable. It was an expensive recharge rescue, but we got him going. Emporia was kind enough to donate two Emporia Pro chargers, and we hooked them up. So we got them up and running and he's got two hardwired chargers, and he's got four EVs in the household. So he's got four drivers that live. He's got a couple kids, and they both have EVs too. And him and his wife drive EVs. So they're charging four cars. So they need really robust home charging. And we set him up, and he should be good to go now. But just another case of this. And again, I say this every time I do these. Whenever I do these, somebody watches one for the first time and they're like, wow, I didn't know this. I have one of these outlets in my garage. Let me open it up. So they open it up and they look inside and it's already melting. I already had two people send me emails saying, I want to thank you so much. I just watched this. You were at Brian's house. So I thought it would be a good idea to shut my circuit off and take a look inside my outlet. The wire is already halfway melted through. The plastic casing is already melting. You might have just saved my family's lives. Thank you so much. that's why I do this. I know I keep saying this here, but it's a public service as much as it's anything, because every time I do one of these recharge rescues, I get people sending me emails and messages saying, I just want to thank you. You might have saved my family. So I'll keep doing them. If anybody out there watching has a problem with their home charging, there's some sort of an issue, you're not comfortable that, you know, something melted, something's not working, your charger keeps shutting off, you have some kind of a real issue that needs fixing, just, you know, let me know, drop me an email or a message. There's plenty of ways to reach me online on X, through my channels here on Batteries Included. And you know, maybe you'll be the next one that I visit. I'll go anywhere in the U.S. And Canada, probably, for that matter. And if you got a charger problem.
Well, in Canada, everyone uses a United charger, so they don't have any charging problems there. So,
well, they sell plug-in units. So I actually went to one house that had a United charger and had the failure, but it wasn't the charger's fault. It was the outlet's fault.
No, it's not the charger's. No, it's so basically, real quick, this is a serious issue. So what should EV owners kind of do if their home charging isn't hardwired, if they have a plug? Should they just have an electrician inspect that once a year or once every 5 years? What do you think?
Well, first of all, if the outlet is more than a year or two old, then you almost certainly have an outlet that I would replace. They did make some high quality outlets previously, Hubble, Bryant. So you might have a good outlet, but unless you know that you have a good outlet, most electricians didn't install high quality, industrial grade outlets unless the customer specified it. Somebody called and said, look, I just bought a Tesla. I need you to install a NEMA 1450 outlet. You got a $10 Leviton outlet that is rated for the duty cycle of an electric range, you know, which is not what you get with electric vehicle charging. You don't get that continuous full current draw for 6, 7, 8 hours, 4 or 5 times a week. So these outlets are just failing. And I can tell you, if you have a low quality outlet and you charge your EV on it, at the full rate. Now, if you've lowered the current draw on your Tesla, or if you have an EV that allows you to lower the current, and you're not sure about your outlet, drop it down to 24 amps or something like that until you can have it inspected and upgraded. Because we're really seeing the problem when people are charging at the full amperage, which most people don't even need to. You're just fine if you're charging at like 24 amps, and it generates so much less heat than 40 amps. You could probably live with even a low grade outlet for a very long time if you were charging at 24 amps. You plug in your car when you get home at night and it's done in an hour and a half or 2 hours. Well, what difference would it make if it took 3 or 4 hours? You're still going to be charged by the time you leave the next day. So, I mean, that have your out, if you have a NEMA 1450 outlet, at the very least, shut your circuit breaker off, open it up and just look in there. See if anything obviously looks like it's having a problem. You know, if you're not comfortable, do it, have an electrician do it. But I would also recommend people, you know, making sure that the circuit breakers come off first. I'd even pull it out, a couple of screws you remove, and make sure the wires are all torqued properly. Because what happens is, with contraction and expansion over the years, the connections loosen up and then the wires start to pull out a little bit. And then you get arcing, and that's when it melts and so forth. So, I mean, it's just a bad – the NEMA 1450 outlets are just a bad installation. I know it'll work if you do it right and you get a high-quality outlet and you inspect it after a year. You open it up, tighten everything up again to make sure it hasn't loosened. But it's just so much better to just do a hardwired unit. You almost never see failures on hardwired units, almost never. And of course, you could if the electrician uses the wrong gauge wire or they don't torque the connections properly. But, I mean, for the amount of times I've seen these NEMA 1450 failures, we've got these great electric cars. You know, they're, you know, in many cases very expensive. And then people are saving $200, $300, $400 so they can, you know, have a cheap electrician or even wire it themselves at home. It just doesn't make sense. It's like for one extra monthly car payment, you could sleep in peace, knowing that you're not going to have a fire in your house, you know? Anyway, you guys know the routine, but I appreciate you letting me stand on my soapbox every time I do a recharge rescue and kind of tell people, look, this is serious, guys. You know, I don't want to see people get hurt.
Right. It's an important message we need to put out there.
Yeah, it's a great project. I love to watch the videos. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
All right. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, you can give us a thumbs up. You can hype us on your mobiles and then click subscribe and tap the bell icon for notifications. Thank you, William, for joining us this week, and hopefully we can have you back again. Talk about some
cars
and cars we get here too. Yeah. So thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon.
Dom, ciao. There you go.
Ciao.
I was going to tell you to say ciao.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I mean, you know, somebody has to tell you to say it.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.